Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Chief Executive Officer, Ghana Tourist Authority. We're live on the radio. Mr. Kwesi Agyeman is right here, my big brother. Good morning.
Good morning, Andy.
How you doing, sir?
I'm hanging in.
Nice.
Another good Monday morning. We're hoping that it's going to be a blessed week.
You hardly come here, but once you come, it's all good. Good news.
So good, but I've always been listening to you every now and
then. Oh, you have time to listen?
Yeah, listen. And then also, your guys do a very good work with social. So even if I'm not here, I'm able to follow what's going on.
Right. It's amazing how you have time for all of these. You seem
It's a 360 world out there. You need to find time for everything. And at least try to keep in touch with what's going on. Because this is where we get our feedback.
I want you to take me through your day. When you wake up, what's the first thing you do?
First thing I do.
No, because I know how busy you are.
Definitely, first thing I do is to pray.
Okay.
Read my Bible. And then I hit the road. Depends on what the day holds for me. Like today, first thing I'm doing is to come to your studio. So I woke up, did my normal quiet time, then I'll set off. But it's always busy because the industry is quite vibrant. So many associations, so many players, everybody wanting to have a bit of you. So you make time for that. You make time for work as well. Go to the office, make sure things are in order. Try and keep up with technology as well, how things are moving on that space. And then eventually also look at family and everything. So we mix it up. We mix it up every day.
Do you have time to exercise?
Oh, yeah, I do. in between the morning and getting out, I try and do a little walk. So those of my friends who live in Abilimpi, they all see me walking in the morning. That's what I do. I mean, but I wake up early. So by 5, I'm on the road.
Do you have time to sleep?
Yeah, I sleep. I mean, they say sleep.
What's your normal sleep time?
when I feel sleepy.
Oh, no, the duration, let's say 4, 5, 6. Or do you do the normal 7-hour sleep?
7 is a luxury, but I try to get at least 6. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's good.
Yeah, 6 is good.
What about food?
I'm not a food person, so I eat on the go. Anything that comes, I just bite and then I'm okay.
Hey, really?
Yeah.
You're a very lucky individual because you look very fit.
Yeah, I don't like food. Food makes me feel full and lazy and all that. So I hardly, but I try and make sure that there's something in the tummy. So, but not go and sit out there, have a big lunch and no, I don't do that.
Really? Even if you have a lunch date, for example, a lunch meeting where
I'll go have a lunch meeting, but I'll focus more on the discussion more than the food.
I see. Yeah. Congratulations. Recently, you launched a book.
Yeah, I tried to put things together because I think if we are all to do that, maybe there will be better perspectives on issues. A lot of our people, presidents, ministers, CEOs, musicians, creative people don't like writing. And if you don't write, the story gets lost. And so I decided, let me put my thoughts together in terms of my time at GTA, especially with the issue of the year of return, and how we can deepen our collaboration and our conversations with the African diaspora. I realized that we don't know much about our history. I mean, even as somebody who had gone through university in Ghana, worked in media and all that, taking up the role as coordinator of the Year of Return taught me things that I never knew. I mean, like the history of the slave trade, where some of the people went. I remember when we started the Year of Return and we quoted Genesis 15:13 or so, where God had told Abraham, your descendants will be in slavery for 400 years. It became a big issue for those in the Caribbean. People like Muta Baruka and Cole took us on that, look, slavery is more than 400 years. So it's not only the Americans, the people in America who were enslaved. I mean, the bulk of our people are in Brazil. I mean, I didn't know that. I mean, to be fair, I thought the Caribbeans had the ball. But, I mean, the history and how things were told me, and based on my research, I realized that there's more that we can learn. But in Ghana, when we go to school, the slave trade is just a passing subject. We don't go deep. And so having taken people to the dungeons several times, I remember my first Emancipation Day when I was giving my speech and I mentioned the Cape Coast Castle to an audience made up mostly of
diasporans.
They were not happy that I was calling the place a castle. They said it's a dungeon because this is where people were maltreated and brutally treated badly and sent out. And so why are you making it look like it's such a dignified place by calling it a castle? But we call it an Emilia Castle. We call it. And so these are issues that come to play, and I realize that it's important that we all seek to understand where we are coming from, and when people come in, how they also appreciate what has happened in the past. And so I said, let me put my thoughts together in a book, what I called When We Returned, because I felt that it was all of us returning, not just they returning to Ghana.
I'll get back to the book, but speaking of the castle and the reminder where people always come in, they go on excursions. Even recently, my children said they were going on an excursion. And I asked one of them, what did you see? And he said, it was scary at the point. And, you know, they were sharing their experiences. Why are we still keeping it? A lot of people have spoken against it. It's a reminder. People, the aspirants come, they go in there, they see the experience, they cry. Oh, Ghana, why are you still keeping this? We've suffered quite a number of backlash. As an authority, why are you still keeping it?
Okay, so the castle actually is under the Ghana Museums and Monuments Board, but it's part of our heritage, it's part of our history, it's part of the history of the black race. And so it's a good reminder for all of us that this thing happened, and like our president said, never again should we allow it to happen. And so if we were to have the castle turn into something else, and that's why it's a UNESCO heritage site, kept sacred, kept so that the history will not be lost. Obviously, people have said, oh, you have the castle, why don't you turn it into such a nice place for people to go? That really defeats the purpose for which it's been kept. We need to remind ourselves. We need to keep it sacred. It's more like a pilgrimage site. People come in there, and I've been there several times with different groups, and sometimes the reaction shocks you. There are people who go in there, cry. There are people who go in there and they see white people there and they say, why are they here? You know, there are people who go in there very sober, I mean, reflecting. Because, you know, if you're an African-American or you're Afro-Caribbean or you're from the diaspora, if you're not like a second, third generation, but you are a historical diaspora, those who've been sent out there, then you know that somebody related to you, it could be your great-grandfather, whatever, it's great-great-grandfather, whatever, or mother, went through that horrific experience through Salaga, through Pikuru, through any other place, barefooted, walking with chains to Asin Mansu, through Asin Prasu to Asin Mansu, being branded as somebody's own. You know, all these stories, I mean, are stories that you cannot just wipe away, and we shouldn't let it die. But it should not be like we are reminding people of pain. It's also a reminder that we need to do better. We need to come together because we are one people. When the African diaspora come here, they feel like they need to be accepted. They are part of us. And so once we also understand the history, understand that these are brothers and sisters who were captured and sent to what was supposed to be a new world, then we will appreciate it more.
I see. Back to the book. Was it difficult putting it together?
Not that difficult. I started off as writing a poem. You know, sometimes when you're there, you have your moments. I say, okay, let me put my thoughts together. Especially when we went to one of the reverential nights in Cape Coast. We walked from Fancy Pim to the Cape Coast Castle.
Oh,
and then
is it far?
It's not too far, about 3 kilometers. But with candles and all that,
right.
And we sing with the diaspora, they come. And as we're going, you see people standing on their balconies watching. And some of them, they don't even understand what's going on. Like, what are these guys doing? Wearing white with candles. Like, we are from Utrimana.
Voodoo stuff.
For a lot of people, I mean, people like Professor Smalls, and I know people who fly to Ghana every year for Reverential Night, mm-hmm. so that they can relive the past. They can go through that and go to the dungeon.
How do you call that?
Reverential.
Reverential Night. Okay.
Yeah, so that's the day before Emancipation Day, which is mm-hmm. on the 1st of August. So we do that every July as part of either Panafest or Emancipation. And so going through that experience, I decided to put that together as a poem, which I did, because Panafest every year calls for papers for papers. So I decided, okay, I'll put this in the Panafest call for entry call for papers. But then I said, look, what did I put, especially when people started talking about, the year of return was somebody's idea, the year of return. I said, but I know the story. I know how it began. I know when the president gave instructions to our then minister, Honorable Katrina Feku, the meetings we held, who was there and all that. So why don't I put it together? Why should I let this be part of the lost history? A lot of our things, like sometimes we talk about Kwame Nkrumah and J.B. Dankwa and all that. Imagine that the first meeting that they held and they had all put their thoughts together in a book. You probably appreciate where each person and the role each person played. So that's what I tried to do in putting it together. But then I realized that it's also important that we try and educate ourselves. So went online, read a lot about the history of the African diaspora, the pain. I mean, I went to school also in Louisiana, in New Orleans, which is a deep south. And there you could tell clearly that, for example, you had uptown New Orleans and downtown New Orleans and the east. And when you say you're in the east, everybody thinks you are black because that's where the blacks are.
Right.
So you can't say, oh, I'm in the east. And when you go into the east and you see the sort of infrastructure there compared to uptown New Orleans, you see the difference. You see the pain. And so when Katrina hit, I think in 2005 or so, the people who suffered the most.
Devastating
were the people in the east because they've been kept in place. So I put all these things together so that we can continue to remind ourselves that the battle is still, Aluta continue.
Yeah,
we're still right, fighting the battle.
In the studio, CEO of Ghana Tourist Authority, Mr. Kwesi Agyeman. Today, I want us to get to know him more. All we know is that, yeah, he's the CEO of GTA, friendly character, hardworking. Yes, what else do we know about him?
Well, I thought we were going to talk about tourism today.
Oh, we will. Okay, we will. So I mean,
let's get in there.
We'll get into that. I mean, almost every time you come here, it's all about tourism. Yeah, tourism. Of course, that's where you reside. And so, yes,
yeah.
Obviously, we can't bypass that. Yeah. But let's know you better. From childhood, where did it start?
I was high. Andy, you're taking me too far.
I threw you off.
You threw me off. I don't know where to start, but okay. So I grew up in Kumasi.
Okay.
Went to university primary, to Pukuware, Buamponsem, to University of Ghana, and then here I am. I mean, after University of Ghana, I worked in, started off as a banker, actually. No, I started off as sales at GBC on the Breakfast Show.
Oh,
I
see.
Remember then, that was when Gifty Auntie and Co. had started, Keitado, Elankra. So we were part of the people who started the Breakfast Show, but I was in sales. So we're going around selling, got opportunity to work with Stanbic, Standard Bank of South Africa then, in South Africa, for a period. So when I was coming back, I got a very good recommendation from them. At that time, Standard Bank were the majority shareholders of Merchant Bank. And so I came, saw an advert for a financial analyst. I mean, but my background, I did political science in the university. So, and then after that, I did an MPA, Master's in Public Administration. So I said, okay, let me go and try. But when I got there, I realized that, hey, the people that I met there were some of my mates were very sharp shooters.
Okay.
People who did maths, statistics, economics, and here I was with my political science background trying to
get into financial. Oh, that's why you met my uncle, huh?
Yeah. So I went in there, did my bit with them, did an interview. Went back feeling that this one I wouldn't get in, but I got a call from them that yes, they were quite impressed with my background and the work that I did, but they wanted to hire me as a relationship manager then. So I went in, started at Merchant Bank for some years, moved into Ecobank. Mm. And then went back to school to do my MBA because I realized then that I needed to improve upon my financial background and business administration. So I did that. Went to Tulane University in New Orleans. But then whilst I was there, because I had worked also in media for some time before moving to Merchant Bank, I was torn between the two. And so I got a call one day from Edward Boateng, I was moving from South Africa to Ghana, and said, look, we're trying to set up global media in Ghana. We had worked together on the Breakfast Show. It was his idea. Because before then, TV started at 3 p.m. Mm. So when he was starting the Breakfast Show with Dr. Frimpong and co, everybody said, hey, you can't have breakfast TV in Ghana. But then they started it, they pioneered it, we were on it. So let's come back and let's work together. So I had to choose between going back to the bank and moving on to be an entrepreneur. So I said, okay, sometimes you need to follow your instincts. I said, let me do that. So I went in there. We started Global Media Alliance, working with Edward. At that time, we were about three of us, Albert, Mensah, myself, Edward, Mr. Fufi. And then started growing. Now it's the rest, as they say, is history. A lot of people have passed through. A lot of people have worked there. In 2017, the president, having worked with me throughout his campaign, felt that I had the wherewithal to handle tourism. Because part of the work that I had done prior to 2017, I had worked with Jake on two projects. One was the presidential tour of Ghana with President Kufuor, when we had ABC from the U.S. coming here with Forrest Sawyer. Mm. So President Kufuor was there. Presidential tour guide, sort of.
Hmm.
So he led the team to go around the country to show the country. And this was premiered in the US. And so after that, we had Anthony Bourdain come to do the food show. And so when, I was one of the producers of that show with Anthony Bourdain. We went around, he tasted every food in Ghana, drank anything that would come his way. And so that's really started giving me an interest in tourism as well, that okay, this is an area that we could as a country build on to develop. So the president saw the potential in me, and I was appointed to GT, and I believe we've done our bits. There's still work to be done, but that's in a nutshell my life story.
Yeah, well,
I'm married with three kids.
I didn't want to touch on that.
Yeah.
But it's good you've reminded me.
Yeah.
But you've done tremendously well, especially with the year of return. You mentioned that in the book you had to, because of history, you didn't want to distort it and state the facts. And that how it came up for Gen Zs or for some of us who are not aware or do not have any idea or may have believed the distorted history. How did it come up?
Okay, so I think somewhere in 2017, around March or so, we just started off, and then I got a call from my minister then, Catherine Afeku Honorable, to come. And then he said, look, hey, the president wants us to continue the work that his friend. And you know, the president and Jake grew up together somehow, and they're very close.
Mm.
And Jake had in 2007, during our 50th anniversary, started what they call the Joseph Project, which was more based on the biblical story of Joseph. Joseph being sold into slavery by his brothers. And then at some point in time when they had need, it was the same Joseph that came to their aid. Mm. So that's what Jake was talking about, that the Joseph Project, now we have sold our own out there, but it's time to reach out to them for support. And so the Joseph Project was such a big thing that Jake launched. But right after that, I think 2007, 2008, the MPP lost power. The Joseph Project was not followed through. But we still had the Panafest and Emancipation running for some time. And so, so how do we rekindle the idea of the Joseph Project? So that was really, for me, the marching order. Because let's look at it. Let's look at how we can do something. So we started fishing out what could be done.
At that time, Jake had expired.
Oh, yeah, Jake had expired, sadly. I mean, great man, great man. But how do you rekindle the dual launch Joseph Project Phase 2? How do you put it together? And then also you had Panafest, you know, but Panafest is more or less an event that happens every other year. And so you said, okay, but you can't have an event every 2 years to really rekindle. So you needed something that was going. And so I think the GIPC, Yofi and Co., there's a African-American Business Society or so. They were doing a big forum in the U.S. So Yofi said, okay, let's go out there and look at how we can get some partners for some of these things. So we went out there to Washington. And so one of the people that I met, the AfricanAncestry.com, Gina Page, she's the first person I spoke to and said, look, we're trying to reconnect the African diaspora with your African ancestry, which is where people go and do DNA to tell them where they are from and all that. And he said, oh, there's a gentleman that you need to meet. It's called Diallo. I said, are Diallo from Mali or where? He said, no, no, he'll be here tomorrow. So tomorrow, the following day, I went there and here walked in this guy, Diallo. So I said, where are you from? He said, Jersey. But he was dressed like an African, just like okay. So I said, so we hit it off. And he said he was doing a project called Back to Africa. And that he was thinking of sending that thing to Senegal because Senegal has a free visa regime for the US. So they don't need visas to go there. But I said, no, 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 Ghana is the place. So I ran him through. But he had been there before. His foster parents were also Ghanaian. So he knew a bit about Ghana. He said, okay, if you can work on the visa. So we did that for 2018, February. You know, February is Black History Month. And so we said, okay, let's do the Back to Africa project. Whilst we're doing that, I think there was a bit of a storm back home because people said, hey, we have Panafest, we have Emancipation, why are you guys trying to create new things and all that? So instead of taking it as a pushback, we felt this was good feedback, at least. And so we sat down together, working with the Panafest Foundation and the Office of Diaspora Affairs, Office of the President. So the Back to Africa happened in February 2018. Just after that, we said, okay, then let's start our homecoming program. So we started off, we started calling it a homecoming. We did a tour of the U.S., Washington, New York, Atlanta, Chicago, where the black communities are strong. And I mean, everybody was like, this would be a good idea. So we said, okay, 2019 will be a homecoming year. But then we just got wind that the U.S. Congress had passed a law, H.R. 1242, to celebrate 400 years of African-American history. So it became like an opportune time for us to really kickstart it. So when we go back, we sat down, had a series of brainstorming sessions, and the Diaspora Affairs Office, they do the homecoming summits every year. And they said, look, if you call it homecoming, it will distort our brand that we've also built in homecoming, because we want to do it every year. And so one conversation led to another, and somebody I think in the meeting said, why not the year of return? Where I said, okay, that sounds like a good idea. So we took that idea, packaged it, sent to the minister, Catherine, said a good idea, let's go and do a presentation. So we went, sat down, all of the people that I've mentioned, Professor A.C. Sutherland, Gedilai, Rabbi Cohen, Kwesi Owuwabebio, myself, from GTA, Ben, Roberta, and Co. We went, we did a presentation to the president. He sat down, looked at the thing, gave input, directed where he thought we should highlight and all that, and said, okay, now you guys go ahead and start. But I'll be ready to launch for you in September. So we kept in touch with the president. We started working on the implementation, because this was now the strategy. Now we needed to break it down into the tactical steps that would be taken. And so president gave us a date in September that he will be ready to launch it for 2019 at the UN General Assembly, when he was going for the UN General Assembly every year. So yes, so we started working on it. And so that's the story. But then fast forward, few years later, you'll be there. Somebody say, "Oh, the year of return was my idea. The year of return." I said, "This guy was not in the room when we were having these meetings. He wasn't there when the president was making input." So I needed to make that point clear that yes, the vision bearer was the president, but obviously the president is not the one who is going to write the objectives for you. He tells you, "This is what I want," and then you go out there and make it happen. And I believe that working together, especially the sort of teamwork that came to bear with Diaspora Affairs. And this was a president who had also created an office in his presidency for Diaspora Affairs. And so that